Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Well, it's time for Playmakers again. Their current productions, upcoming and current productions, are two. The Tempest, that's a Shakespeare play, and a relatively new play, Metamorphosis. Joe Hodge is here to tell us exactly how he got us into this idea of the rotating rep, and he's brought with him someone who's familiar to many of us, Kathy Hunter Williams, who plays a major role in The Tempest of Alonzo. We'll find out about that as well. And we have a new addition to the Playmakers regular troupe, Julia Gibson. She's also going to play a male role. So welcome to all three of you all. And Joe Hodge, what in the world are you up to?
Oh, who knows? We really wanted to see if we could put these two plays in rotating rep and design them around a pool of water in the Paul Green Theater. Metamorphoses is a play that I've wanted us to do at Playmakers since I got here. And for those who are familiar with our theater, with the Paul Green Theater where we produce our plays, it had a festival deck in there for 25 years.
What's a festival deck?
A festival deck is a semi-permanent structure that's put into the room on and around which our sets have been built for the last 25 years or so. And so there was no way to put a pool in the room with a festival deck in there.
The festival deck is just, for those who are familiar, this is the Playmakers regular, where they do their plays, out into the audience.
That's right. So the sort of raised platform that came down towards the audience had been in there for a very long time. And there's no way to put a pool of water in the room, of course, with that deck in place. So finally, this past summer, we'd been wanting to change it for some time, give directors and designers new opportunities in the room. We took the festival deck out. We relocated the trap to the center of the room, and we put a pool in there so that we can do these two plays. Mary Zimmerman's Metamorphoses is written with an idea that it's to be performed in and around a pool. That's how that play was made. And then the thought of, well, what if we were to take Shakespeare's The Tempest and put that in rep with Metamorphoses, both plays that take water and the sea as their central metaphor, and see if we do these two plays in a pool. So that's what we've done.
Well, I don't want to get off topic of the current two plays that are we have the opportunity to see, but you kind of slipped in the big news. I mean, the radical change in the – I mean, is this a permanent change?
It's a permanent, in that festival deck, Desmond Healy designed it. It was beautiful. It served a marvelous function for the theater for a very long time. And for all of its aesthetic beauty and for all that it did that was good for making plays, it also was a limiting factor. You know, the fact of those platforms in the room was something that designers had to incorporate and design around. And now they have much more an empty room in which to start and design. So I think finally it gives us many more opportunities in terms of design opportunities and directorial opportunities in the room.
Well, this is the signal of your establishment as the leader of the Playmakers. This is probably something you wondered about the first day you arrived, and now you've finally got the... Well, I can't think of the right word to use on the radio, but you've got the the macho to say, okay, guys, I've been here. I'm a part of it. We need to make this change, and I'm ready to take the lead in making it. I mean,
it was time. It's not like I've got there and hated that stage. In fact, I was in graduate school at UNC when that festival deck went in and was installed. I'm a big fan of it, and change is good. So, it was just time.
Well, it's possible to still put some platform in there with...
This is
Julia.
Oh, absolutely. But it allows us to decide where those platforms go without going, well, here is a 30-foot by 20-foot, I'm making that up, I don't know exactly its dimensions, a platform that goes into the room that is at 27 inches and is permanently installed. It allows us to get down to floor level, which is part of the reason we could put 15 tons of water into the room, which are suspended largely over open space. I mean, it's a huge engineering challenge to get that pool in the room, but it wouldn't be possible with the festival deck in the room with us.
Well, Joe, tell us a little bit about, we'll get back to Shakespeare's The Tempest, but tell us a little bit about Metamorphosis and tell us how your two actors fit into Metamorphosis when their roles are really primarily in The Tempest.
Well, Metamorphoses, so Metamorphoses and The Tempest, they share many actors, but some actors are only in one play and not in the other. It's just the nature of how what the casting requirements of those two plays are. Mary Zimmerman's Metamorphoses takes the Ovid, written 2,000 years ago, and takes several of the myths in Ovid's Metamorphoses, and looks at them from a contemporary perspective. And so we have the Midas story, we have the Orpheus and Eurydice story.
But you're talking, I mean, all this is familiar to the scholars among us,
mm-hmm.
Who did their homework when they were in school. But tell us a little bit more about Ovid and the myths that we...
Well, you know... The thing about them, I think, is what one will find immediately, whether or not somebody goes, oh, that's Orpheus and Eurydice, oh, that's Midas. Everybody knows these stories. I mean, I think part
of... We know the stories, but some of us might not know exactly where they came from.
I think that's mm-hmm. right. And my guess is that, they go back pre-Ovid, too. And I think part of what Mary's exploring in the storytelling of Metamorphoses is how we construct our narratives, our cultural narratives. And so, you know, many of the themes that are in the Midas story, the Orpheus and Eurydice story, the Baucis and Philemon story, we find them in major religions. They're narratives over time. The play is finally about how we share story in order to understand ourselves. And so I think part of what's great about Metamorphoses is that they are 2,000-year-old tales. We recognize them immediately, and we recognize mm-hmm. them psychologically, we recognize them emotionally, we recognize them narratively.
Well, Kathy Hernot-Williams, you're a young, seasoned playmakers.
Clear it up.
and all of this gives, I mean, you have the opportunity to participate and be an actor in The Tempest, but also to participate in the other play as well.
Well, I'm an understudy in Metamorphoses, mm-hmm. so I'm not in the performing in it, but I'm understudying one of our graduate students. So I'm observing that part of the water ballet or water performance from the outside. But so I'm playing Alonzo in The Tempest.
Well, I want to come back to The Tempest in a minute, but tell us from your perspective as an understudy,
uh-huh.
but as a real watching this play develop and watching this sort of water scenery being built. And I mean, tell us about it from your perspective.
Well, what the rehearsals that I've been in were in the early stages of the process when we were doing some table work and doing the readings. One of the things that was really interesting to me was looking at how the stories reverberated with each other, how the two plays talked to each other. We were talking about this, I guess, we were at the Durham Public Library the other night with a group of people, and someone asked us, what is it that you found that these two plays have in common? And one of the things that for me resonates is the sense of loss and forgiveness and renewal that runs throughout both of the plays. So many of the stories that they are telling in Metamorphoses talk about these, loss and renewal and transformation, really, with the events that the characters go through.
Well, you have a new colleague.
Yes.
Joe, would you give official introduction to the, is she the latest edition?
Well, among the latest editions. Julia Gibson is the latest edition, the latest addition to our graduate faculty at UNC. Julia is a spectacular teacher and new faculty member. And most thrilling for me as the artistic director of Playmakers to have a gigantic actor join our company has been really wonderful, and these are the first plays that Julia is doing with us, and playing Stefano in The Tempest, and a variety of roles in Metamorphoses.
Thank you. That was very nice. I'm glad you're recording this.
You want to save this for yeah. later.
Well, Joe, remember when you said
talk? We're going to come back to The Tempest, but talk about being thrown in the pool there in Metamorphoses.
Oh, it's thrilling. It's I'm not in the water as much as some of the other actors in Metamorphoses. And we're rehearsing it, just on a floor right now. So we haven't actually been in the water yet. So it's interesting.
What do you, well, you've heard Joe and Kathy talk a little bit about how the play fits. And what, I mean, tell us from your perspective, is this, will this be, is this your first encounter with Metamorphosis?
I saw Metamorphosis when it was in New York. It was at two different theaters. And I'd actually worked with Mary Zimmerman in several other productions, but this one I was just an audience member. And I, so I saw it when it was in the smaller theater before it moved to Broadway. And
well, let me push you on this, Julia. Why do I want to see this play? You, I mean, you went to it. What did it do for you? What do you think it might do for some of the?
You know,
rest
it's very
it?
For it's very theatrical for one thing. Uh-huh. Like, it's not something you're going to have this a similar experience if you see a film of it, because it's there. It's very beautiful visually. It's beautiful. It's moving. But it's not moving like one long story from beginning to end. It's moving in a way that you might not be able to identify why you're moved. Like, you don't get attached and follow a particular character's story, but you suddenly find yourself touched by the human experience and thing. It's more abstract, the what you follow.
Well, listen, let me push you on this. There are a number of different scenes and myths that are. Was there one? Or give us an illustration of one that might have caught your attention or that you remember that you think I'm going to really enjoy seeing.
Oh boy, do you have one?
Well, I think, Kathy.
I think the Eurydice. With
why? Tell us about it.
There are two versions of it that are in the play. So, and you guys correct me so that I know. Mm-hmm. I don't mistake the names, but there are two retellings of this particular myth, and one is sort of the traditional one that I knew.
What's
where,
that?
Which is the one where when you guys help me with the names, I'm gonna embarrass
that's
myself.
That's okay, or somebody.
when Eurydice is when it's who is it? It's
Orpheus.
Orpheus comes down to get her, and as he's going away, going back up to Earth, he turns around and looks at her, and then he loses the chance to bring her back. I'm giving you the short version.
Yeah, so Hades gives the instruction, you can have Eurydice back. He goes down to the underworld to see if he can have Eurydice back. Hades says, you can have her back on one condition. She's going to follow you on the path back to the light out of the underworld, but if you turn around to look at her, she's ours forever. A simple enough thing. And again, in the way Orpheus and Eurydice, if we think of Lot's wife, I mean, these are narratives that find their way through our major religions in addition to the narrative. Anyway, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, that's
Kathy.
Good.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Joe. Yay. And then the second telling is Rilke, right?
Yeah.
It's her version where it first time I heard it shocked me, because Eurydice experiences death in a really it's almost beautiful, I think, in the telling of it, that she's so filled and completed by this journey that she's made, that when he comes back to get her, she doesn't even recognize him when he turns around. She's already moved on to this other telling. So that's one of the stories for me that really just stood out, because it just took a story, one familiar telling of that journey that I was very familiar with, but then a whole other point of view with Rilke's version of it. And it was just putting those two together made me think about death and, you know, loss and longing and in a very different way. So that's just one for me that I think is just fascinating.
Yeah.
Well, we need to take a break. We're visiting with Joe Hodge, of course, the producing artistic director at the Playmakers, along with two actors in the current productions, Julia Gibson and Kathy Hunter-Williams. This is all a part of the rotating production in November all the way until December the 8th of the Shakespeare's The Tempest and Mary Zimmerman's Tony Award-winning Metamorphoses. The four of us will be right back after this short break. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Got visitors from the Playmakers because we're celebrating their two productions in rotating rep. The first is The Tempest by William Shakespeare, and the other is a Tony Award-winning play by Mary Zimmerman on Broadway for a long time, Metamorphoses. These are in rotating repertoire all the way through November, all the way to December 8th. Joe Hodge, thanks for coming. Thanks for bringing these two beautiful actors to help us understand what's going on.
Thanks for having us.
Tell us, or remind us, I guess, about the Shakespeare, The Tempest, how it fits, and why you wanted to do this play.
Well, The Tempest is Shakespeare's last play, and I think of all his plays, maybe with Winter's Tale and Pericles, the late romance plays, it's the most allegorical, I think, of his work, and it seems to be a very, very good fit with the Mary Zimmerman Metamorphoses. So there's Prospero, who is exiled. He and his daughter end up on an island where.
Now, who's Prospero?
Prospero is the Duke of Milan, as Shakespeare would have it said. And there's a coup. His brother takes over,
sends him away.
Crown and sends him away. He and his very, very young daughter are cast away onto an island. A magical island of a kind. There's a spirit Ariel that's there. There is a monster, half-human creature, Caliban, who's there. And they spend many years on this island until a ship bearing those who had wronged him come close to the island. He creates a tempest, which casts them onto the island itself. And over the course of somewhere between 3 and 6 hours. Shakespeare contradicts himself a bit in the text. But the whole action of the play happens in one day. I don't think there's another Shakespeare play in which that is true. He brings to bear, you know, he brings all those who have wronged him into the same room at one point. And the beauty of the play is watching Prospero, who rules that island with an iron fist. His daughter is very much under his control. Ariel is very much enslaved. Caliban is very much enslaved. And in the short course of the few hours of this play, it's a play very much about redemption and about forgiveness. And by the end of that play, he has released Ariel. He has certainly eased his grip on Caliban. He's released his daughter, who marries the young Ferdinand, and he's forgiven those who wronged him. And it's a play about maturing. It's a play about wisdom. It's a play about redemption. It's a play about forgiveness. I think finally it's a play about love, which positions it very closely to the themes that Mary Zimmerman is pursuing in Metamorphoses.
All right, we talked about Prospero.
Prospero.
Prospero. Prospero.
Yes.
Now, where'd you get a man to? Where'd you get a male actor to play this role?
I don't know why you'd ask that way. So Julie Fischel is playing Prospero. Kathy Williams, who's here in the studio with us, is playing Alonzo. Julia Gibson, who's here in the studio with us, is playing Stefano. You know, we have a company. We have a company of actors and a company.
Let me, Julia. Julie Fischel is not here.
Julie Fischel is not here.
I know that you are very proud of her work and particularly some of the recent things that she's done. Remind us, or those of us who've been to the Playmaker, some of her recent.
Recent, she was in Virginia Woolf. She played Martha in Virginia Woolf for us. Most recently in Cabaret, she played Fräulein Schneider in that play. She's been a company member here for many years.
I mean, does she just demand that you give her unusual roles?
No, we demand that she does things that she doesn't want to do. No, she's a great actor. We have a fantastic company of actors, and you know, my co-director isn't here, and I wish he were. Dominique Sarand, who's one of the world's great directors, and we're honored to have him here working with us on this show. And I've certainly learned a lot.
All right,
co-directing
you brought this
up, but why
didn't you need a co-director for this?
Well, because there are two plays, and it's an awful lot.
Have you split off the responsibility?
No, we shared the responsibility. So, you know, what we decided not to do is not to say, okay, well, Joe, why don't you do The Tempest, and Dominique, why don't you do Metamorphoses? We thought we'd put the plays much more strongly in conversation with one another if we both took responsibility for making both of these plays with this company of actors and designers.
I just don't see how that works. Well, you've got I mean, don't you need a boss and one single sort of vision to...
It's hard. Well, look, it's hard. I mean, for most actors, one director is more than enough. And, you know, and two can be really problematic. But I think, you know, we're wrestling with it honestly and transparently. It is challenging. It really is. And it's challenging for the company. You know, Dominique and I are very much in agreement about what we're pursuing, but we're different artists, we're different people, and we have different vocabularies for how we articulate what it is that's being pursued. So it is not without its challenges, surely.
Well, have you ever, I mean, this is what I imagine, is that somebody turns a, you know, you're staging this thing, somebody jumps in the pool or turns a corner, and one director thinks it would be really good if they did a flip, and one thinks that would ruin the whole thing. And so the actor, who does...
So we have that conversation honestly in the room, and we try one and we try the other, and sometimes, you know, I mean, part of collaborating is, of course, I like how Dominique says, the collaboration is about taking the other director's ideas and making them better than that person would have made them. So you know, we're picking up one another's threads all the time and challenging one another and asking the difficult questions if we think it's not getting us where we need to go. I've loved the process entirely, but it is indeed challenging. But back to the Julie Fischel question, you know, when Dominique and I were putting together the company and thinking about casting, I said, well, how many guests do you think you need? And it was great that his response was, I don't think we should have any. You have a great company, and we should make it with the actors you have. And once we decided that, you know, in Shakespeare's time, all of his plays were acted by men and boys. And so there aren't a lot of women roles, frankly. There are 6 men's roles for every 1 female role in Shakespeare. And we have so many great women actors in our company that we thought, we don't want to change the gender in the plays. We don't want to call Prospero Prospera and have Miranda calling her mother instead of father. We didn't want to do it, which is a way. I mean, it's been done very often, most recently and famously with Helen Mirren in the role. We wanted to keep it as described and have Alonso played by a woman and Prospero played by a woman and Stefano played by a woman, but asking all the questions, not in the exploration of it, imagining them as women, but women playing as men.
Do we, in the audience, are these women who we're going to, in a minute, get us to tell us what it's like to act in, but will I in the audience, will I see a man up there, or will I see a woman up there?
You'll see a woman playing a man.
I mean, she'd be in women's clothing?
Or no, in men's clothing.
But so I'll know because I read the program that it's a woman in a man's role, but if I didn't...
Well, you're going to know because you're in a theater, and you're going to say, oh, that actor's playing Prospero, and I hope that after 3 minutes, the question of, well, that's a woman playing Prospero is no longer a question. Or if you're watching Stefano and there you go, oh, that's a woman playing Stefano. And once that's been said and established, we can all move on with the play. And I think that's what's happening, actually.
I'll tell you what, let's take a break, and then let's come back and ask these two women who you are putting in men's roles what it's like for them.
Great.
We're visiting with the crew from the Playmakers, including the producing artistic director, Joe Hodge, and 2 actors, Julia Gibson and Kathy Hunter-Williams, and we'll all be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. We're talking about the Playmakers' current productions running in November and all the way till December 8th in rotating rep, Shakespeare's The Tempest and Tony Award-winning Mary Zimmerman's Metamorphoses. Joe Hodge is here to tell us about it, and you brought 2 actors, Joe. Mm-hmm. In the old days, I would say actresses. But there are 2 female actors playing male roles. Can you get them to tell us a little bit about what it's like to play these roles?
Yeah. All right. You're on.
Okay. Julia, you start.
Well,
let me just say that this is, if you join us late, one of our new playmakers, actors, is and a member of the faculty in the School of Drama is Julia Gibson. And you're playing a male role.
I am.
In
I am Stefano, the drunken butler. And actually, the man part of it for me has been helpful because Stefano's one of the clowns in the show, and which is can be intimidating to know, like, that your job is to be goofy and funny and to really not know how to do that or how far can you go. So having it be a man, which I am not, already gives me this permission to
be goofy.
to go a little further outside of myself. And so that's helpful in finding the character of
Let me just, this is so interesting to me, but so when you take on the role of another gender, it helped liberate you to be in somebody else's role. I mean, you know that you're there. And that you're somebody different. You've got
a
freedom
of, you know. Right off the bat.
If I'm a man, I can really do some.
There's a physical and a vocal, like, permission to go outside of myself.
Yeah.
And he's a silly character, so, you know, it helps to, like, right off the bat, I get to stand in a goofy way and talk in a funny way, you know?
The way all men do all the time.
if it was, you know, Stephanie or something, we had turned him into a woman, I don't know, I wouldn't have a clue what, it would be harder, that it would be a little more dangerous as far as, like, what.
I just love this because it's sexism all over. You would say, if I were a woman, I just couldn't act this way.
Listen,
this wouldn't be right, but a man can do all these things.
We see men playing women's roles over the place, and you know, there's not a lot of, just to get political for a moment, like, there's not a lot of jobs for women in the first place, because, you know, look on TV and movies, and in plays, like, the ratio of male to female roles is, you know, really, really different. And yet you still see men playing women's roles all the time. So this is really exciting.
It becomes to be, now I'm interested in whether Joe intended this to work out this way, but it does become a bit of a political statement to say, hey, look at this. Look what we can do.
Well, and it doesn't even need to be that it's a political statement. It's just, well, we're just doing it. You know, it happens the other way without any conversation about it. And so it can happen this way as well. And
and I'll say, you know, a thing that resonates through this, and Julia is exactly right in terms of, you know, I think we just do it. We have good actors who are right for these roles, so you cast them and you go and make the play. But The Tempest in particular explores so much an idea of duality, the idea of all the parts of ourselves. And the idea, so, you know, there's a reading of The Tempest, certainly, that suggests that Caliban and Ariel aren't really separate from Prospero. You know, from a Jungian standpoint, Ariel is his lighter and brighter and better part, and Caliban is his earthier, primal, where our most primal urges lie. Prospero has a great line late in the play when Caliban, who has conspired to kill him, comes back in, and Prospero says, "This thing of darkness, I acknowledge mine." You know, there's a reading of that. So the play is very much about all that we contain and our better parts and certainly our worst. So the idea of being in a gender question in several roles across this play, I think, is an interesting layer in terms of that conversation as well.
Well, Kathy, how about you? You have the same feeling?
You know, I think Julia really hit something on the head, that it gives us, just playing a different gender, gives you immediate permission to just step right outside of yourself. You know, as with every role, I mean, you start with, you know, just trying to find the truth of the character and the journey of the character that they're going through. For me, physically, it's been very interesting to sort of try to lose some of my, you know, more in, you know, my feminine kind of movement. Julie Fischel and I often go back and we're like, oh, nope. Do that again. Can't do that.
Oh, really?
Too girly. Can't do that.
No. Really?
No, in rehearsal, yeah, because...
What would be a little girly thing that would catch up with
no,
you?
No, just some. Maybe sometimes the way that you
swing
you
your hips
somebody
a little bit, or
I'm trying to hold those hips, DJ. I'm trying to keep those hips under control. Their costume's going to help me with that a lot. But you know, just sometimes your gestures are...
Uh-huh.
Both Joe and Dominique have been working a lot in this really beautiful physical world in the plays with the idea of gesture and movement, and how do we really making those movements mean something, and those gestures really being very specific and very particular, the ones that we use. So I have found myself also observing my own sons very closely, in a sense, just to sort of think, well, what is different about the way that men move and women move, and what are some of those things, that tangible things that I can just sort of begin to layer in or begin to use and observe?
I think this, for me, would be quite a challenge, in the sense that you don't want to give up your femininity permanently, but you want to act like a man. You want to have it both ways.
It's like any other role, I think, any other character that you step into. You really do want to step right into the shoes of the character. In this case, I think this is actually the second man I've played. So this is a trend, huh, Joe? But you really do want to step into the shoes of the character. So I don't approach it from thinking I've got to be a man. I'm thinking of, okay, who is Alonzo, and what has he just been through, and how does this resonate with him, and, you know, what are the journey that he's taking?
Well, tell us a little bit about Alonzo. I tell you what, let's take a break, and then we'll come back, and I'd like for you all to talk about your characters. We're visiting with folks from the Playmakers, including producing artistic director Joe Hodge, and actors Julie Gibson and Kathy Hunter-Williams. We're talking about the Playmakers' rotating repertory production of Shakespeare's The Tempest and Mary Zimmerman's Metamorphoses, done in rotating rep all through November, all the way to December 8th. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. We're talking about the rotating rep productions of the Playmakers in November and through December 8th of Shakespeare's The Tempest, and a new play recently off Broadway, Metamorphoses. And Joe, we've got two actors, two great women actors who are playing men's roles. Can you get them to talk a little bit about their characters and what the characters are up to in this play?
Yeah. So Stefano, the drunken butler that Julia Gibson is playing, you know, Shakespeare has some real fun in creating the clown version of this court world. So Caliban, who is this half-monster, and Trinculo, who is a compatriot of Stefano's, they decide that what they're going to do is they have this little conspiracy that they're going to go and kill Prospero and take over the island. So Shakespeare has some fun in creating a king and his subjects in the funny world of the play, and poking fun at these ideas of ego and power and ambition. And as played by the clowns in the play, Julia Gibson as Stefano and John Allure as Trinculo, and then Caliban making up this nutty triumvirate, I think they have a lot of fun.
We do, sometimes too much fun. In a lot of Shakespeare's plays, there's the storyline, and then there's the sort of clowns or funnies, as Dominique always refers to us.
Your co-director.
Co-director, yes.
And this is Julia Gibson talking about her role.
Yes. So they're usually in separate scenes. They're not necessarily interwoven into the plot. They have sort of their own storyline happening. And so Stefano likes his bottle and carries it with him throughout the play until it gets lost. And so he's the drunken butler, and he... when he meets up with Caliban and turns Caliban on to the alcohol, and Caliban convinces me that I can take over this island. And so in my other life, I'm just the lowly butler. So here this idea of becoming the king is very enticing. And, I don't know how much I'm really set up to kill Prospero if we ever get there, but the fantasy of being the king gets me through one moment to the next. And I beat up on Trinculo a lot, and that's a lot of fun.
It's great fun.
Kathy Hunter-Williams, how about your role?
I'm playing Alonzo, who is the king of Naples, and
are you the bad guy? Or
I am one of the bad guys. I'm the bad court. We're the ones who really I support it
Getting rid of
Antonio, was Prospero's brother, usurping him. And we're returning from a wedding. My daughter's been married, and we're on our return voyage home when Prospero creates the tempest and brings us all ashore.
Are you surprised? Is Antonio? Are you surprised by this? Character surprised by this?
Oh, completely. I mean, we all think that he's dead. I mean, he's been gone for 12 years when the play starts. So we have no idea. The court does that. What has happened to him? You know, we just assume that.
Don't care.
No, not at all. Not at all. He's out of the way, out of sight, out of mind. But what happens in the tempest is I lose my son. We're all returning together on this ship, and I lose my son. And so for Alonso, this is really, it's about loyalty, disloyalty. It's about loss. It's about grief. It's about sorrow. He's looking for his son the entire entire play, and also there's, you know, moments where he moves from, is he still alive, is he dead, is he looking for the body, you know, he needs some sort of closure with this loss, this great loss that he's experiencing. And then of course there's a little bit of extra conspiracy between the, you know, my brother and Prospero's brother, and there's one loyal servant who's with us this whole time, Gonzalo. Who is played by Ray Dooley, and he is with us and is the only person who, well, I'm not going to give the whole story away.
Yeah, but you know, but Alonso, for his yes, he's one of the bad guys. He's one of the conspirators that ousted Prospero. But the great beauty of that journey in the play is that Alonso becomes humanized for us and deeply empathetic towards him because of the loss that he suffers, which humbles him and humanizes him greatly. And the Alonso journey, I find to be really a very beautiful one in the play.
So you got a bad guy who, because of a terrible thing that's happened in his life, you persuade the audience to identify with him, at least in some respects, and to empathize with
him. So, you know, in Winter's Tale functions in very much the same way. You know, Alonso thinks he's lost his son. What we learn is his son's been shipwrecked just to another part of the island. And there is something that in the grieving, in the repentance, that allows the son to be restored, you know? And it's, we see this in the late Romance plays. We see this in Pericles. We see it in Winter's Tale, and it's here in The Tempest as well. There's, and again, it connects to Mary Zimmerman's work so beautifully. There is, there's too much ego, there's too much ambition, there's too much wrongness done. One is made to suffer for it, and if one is appropriately penitent and goes through a journey towards a kind of humility and an acknowledgement of wrongs done, then the possibility of restoration exists. It's how Winter's Tale works, it's how Pericles works, it's how Tempest works, and it's how a lot of the stories in Mary Zimmerman's Metamorphoses works.
So you're telling us that we're going to have something akin to a religious experience if we pay attention to these plays?
Well, they're spiritual. I don't know that they're religious, but I think they are both deeply spiritual plays, yeah.
Yeah, it's a really human, I mean, that's the why they've been around so long, why they keep being retold. I mean, it's a very deep human thing to understand this story of redemption, as Joe just said. It's really, they're powerful.
So, I mean, just predict, I mean, audience members are going to have different reactions to it. Well, you could predict that I'm going to have the reaction, one, of seeing these plays and understanding my life better, or will there also be a message of how not only understanding life, but there are things that I should do to make my life.
Yeah, well, messages are tricky business. I don't think we're in the business of figuring out what the audience relationship to the plays is going to be.
But if you don't have some idea about that, You've already said these are things that we would expect.
Yeah, well, look, we program plays and we make plays with a hope that they resonate deeply in our community. Of course, it's why we've programmed them and it's why we've made them. But I think one has to be careful in the making of these plays to assume what an audience's experience of them are going to be. You know, you make them you hope, rigor and integrity and an idea about what it is that you're making with the artists in the room to make it. And at some point you open the doors and folks come and see it. And hopefully they have a meaningful experience.
Well, more to talk about, but we're out of time. I'd like to continue this conversation, and I'm going to go and see what it does for me.
Good.
I think there are a lot of possibilities. Thanks to Joe Hodge for both arranging and directing, co-directing these plays. And of course, thanks to our new playmaker, Julia Gibson, and our experienced.
very good.
Hunter Williams for coming and talking about these two plays, Shakespeare's The Tempest and also the new production from Broadway, Metamorphoses, presented in rotating rep by the Playmakers all through November and all the way through December 8th. Thanks to the three of you, and thanks to everyone for listening. This is D.G. Martin, who's talking. I'll be back here before you know it.